Hi, I'm Jacqueline Kinser, and for the past 5 years, I've been helping families all around the globe to overcome their breastfeeding challenges. And this is the first non-clinical breastfeeding podcast that shows you how to rock breastfeeding and master motherhood through practical tips, mindset shifts, and honest conversation to create a confident and empowering breastfeeding journey. This is the Breastfeeding Talk Podcast.
Today, I am excited to bring you an incredible interview that I hope is really informative and about kind of some different topics than we normally cover on the show. But I feel super blessed and grateful that she agreed to come on and share her expertise with us because Dr. Betsy Grunch is who we're going to be talking to. And if you don't know her, she is Lady Spine Doc on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. And she is a board certified neurosurgeon from Gainesville, Georgia. I found her while just scrolling one evening on Instagram myself. And she's really, really, an inspirational person, quite honestly. So go check out just even a few of her posts and you'll see what I mean. But just a little bit more about Dr. Grunch before I introduce you to her. She attended the University of Georgia, where she completed her Bachelor of Science degree in biology. She then went on to the Medical College of Georgia and following that, matched in neurological surgery at Duke University Medical Center. At Duke, she earned the Synthes Spine Fellowship from 2010 to 2011, and in 2013, Dr. Grunch returned to her hometown of Gainesville to join the Longstreet Clinic, where she still works today. We have her website and more information linked up in our show notes, of course. And Dr. Grunch's main professional interests are minimally invasive spine techniques and advancing the field of neurotrauma. She lives with her husband, Ray, two children, Riley and Beatrice, who she'll be telling you more about, and her two dogs, Pancake and Butters, in Gainesville, Georgia. Dr. Grunch's professional affiliations include the American College of Surgeons, the Association of Women Surgeons, the American Association of Neurological Surgeons, and the Congress of Neurological Surgeons. So she's a wonderful expert, and I will introduce you to her now. Welcome back to the Breastfeeding Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Jacqueline Kinser, and today I'm joined by a special guest that I have the honor of interviewing and bringing to you today. Her name is Dr. Betsy Grunch, and she's a board-certified neurosurgeon. She's also known as Lady Spine Doc, where she creates content covering her life as a neurosurgeon, wife, and mom. In fact, the reason why she's here today is because I was scrolling Instagram one evening, and like the algorithm likes to do, it showed me stuff about spines and surgery, and I recently had spine surgery. So I saw her profile, I checked it out, I started watching a bunch of her videos, and I was like, wow, I love her message because she's a woman in medicine. And you know, then she's talking about spine stuff. And she had this one particular video that was about an annular tear in an intervertebral disc, which is what I had essentially, but a different degree. And then that video actually led into talking about pregnancy and postpartum. And I was like, I have to have her on the podcast. So thank you so much for being here. I'm super excited for you to give us a different perspective on things of, you know, just the perinatal time frame and all of that.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh yeah, no, it's exciting. So yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself because, you know, I feel like you are doing some amazing work out in the world. And then with your content that you're putting out, your message is just so, so clear and inspiring for me as someone in healthcare, obviously not at your level. But yeah, tell us a little bit about how you got started with even just the social media, but you're a little bit about your career and your family.
Sure. So I am a board certified neurosurgeon. I specialize in spine surgery, and I have been in practice in my hometown in Georgia for about 10 years. So I was born and raised in Georgia, kind of got into medicine. I'll try to abbreviate my story very short, but my mom was involved in a car accident when I was younger and was paralyzed. And so I was very motivated by her injury and really became interested in medicine and particularly spinal cord injury, and wanted to understand why an injury like hers could be so devastating. And ultimately, I wanted to really take care of people in her situation, because I thought that I could have something to share. And so I graduated college medical school, matched into residency at Duke, and completed my residency in 2013, and then came back to serve the community where I grew up. And so, yeah, I've been here for 10 years and have been treat a wide range of patients for anything neurosurgical. So that means brain, spine, nerve related. I love what I do. I became a mom about 2 years into practice. So 2015, my son was born, and my daughter was born in 2018. So I have two kids, married, and two dogs, of course. And so I really just love my job. I love taking care of patients. I really enjoy patient education. And, you know, to answer your question about the social media, is I really enjoy teaching. I've always enjoyed social media, period, but really didn't know how to kind of navigate that as a professional. And when COVID happened, you know, a lot of folks were turning to social media for information and guidance. And so I kind of started utilizing it that in time to just kind of, had some extra time on my hands because we weren't operating during periods of the pandemic. And I just started to pick up speed there. And I just have grown tremendously from there. Actually hit 1 million followers on TikTok today. Crazy. Oh, but
congrats. I saw you were close earlier today.
Yeah, I hit it today. Super excited. But yeah, so, you know, my message is just, I have the trifold message, which you kind of read, is, you know, about medicine and spine surgery in my field, about being a mom, and then just kind of a humorous side where I like to kind of share, you know, express myself on my platform. And so I've learned as a mom, and more relevant to your viewers and your podcast, that back injuries are very common in the perinatal window. And personally, myself, I shared in that video that you mentioned, that story was about me. So my son was, I was 4 weeks postpartum. I had a C-section. My first pregnancy was cleaning. I'll never forget. I was bending over in his bassinet to clean up. He peed and it went everywhere because he's a little boy and that's what little boys do. Yep. And I was leaning over in the bassinet, bending. It was like a pack and play. And why I had that, I don't know, because we'll talk about ergonomics, but it was not a good ergonomic setup. Bent over to clean it up and then pop my back one out. And you know, I learned personally a lot about back injuries during that time. I never needed surgery like you did, but yeah, it was very enlightening. So yeah, we can jump into that a little bit, but.
Oh yeah. Gosh. No, I think, you know, just a lot of us that end up in some form of healthcare, have gotten there because there's a personal journey attached to it. Like you said, with your mom, you know, I did not even know lactation consultant was a profession until I had a baby. So, right. Here I am. Right. and yeah. And to your point too, you mentioned something, I just wanted to capture this really quick, because you talked about patient education, and that's one of the reasons why you've become a TikTok doc, but, also your website, I have to say, I was super impressed by it. I don't know if I told you that in the email, but I have been around the block a few times these last 3 years and figuring out, you know, solutions to my issues, right?
Yeah.
The lack of information, not only on somebody's website, but even like a handout you might get, a discussion you might have in an appointment about even just like the surgery that I had, for instance. You know, the patient education for me came from the nurses in the hospital, where I was like, oh, that's a very different expectation than what my surgeon set for me. Right. Your website has some amazing information about procedures on it that I thought was so helpful. You probably are like, this is really basic. No, it's much more than most surgeons give. So I just wanted to say that patient education so important for me on the patient side of things. And I love that you're doing that through social media, but even on your website, you know, I just was really, really impressed, and it's very lacking. So shout out to you, but, yeah, like you said, yeah, I was like, wait, if I had read her site before I had my surgery, I would have been a lot better prepared. But it's kind of the same thing with pregnancy and birth, right? Like we're having moms take birth classes and they're learning, you know, maybe labor, stages of labor, pain management techniques, you know, coping skills, how their partner can support them, you know, what to expect, all of those things. But we're not really prepping their bodies for that experience in terms of those ergonomics or, you know, what you should and should not be doing. And I find, you know, some people don't seem to have a lot of questions, but a lot do, right? And so oftentimes these questions fall on someone like me where when they're seeing the pediatrician with their baby that they had 3 days ago, it's about the baby, right? And, you know, that mom is not seeing her prenatal care provider or postpartum care provider for 6 weeks. And so they're like, hey, you know, I have this, you know, I've never had a C-section before, but, you know, here's what's going on. I'm like, no, oh, that's really not my area of expertise. I mean, I could tell you what I've learned by virtue of the work I do, but, you know, this is a good question for your doctor. Well, I'm not seeing my doctor for 6 weeks. Yeah, I know, but you should probably still call them, right? So to your point, like you did not know certain things about ergonomics, you know, you're just trying to take care of your little baby and you have this back issue. And yeah, back pain, back issues are so common during this time frame. And we're just not, we're not setting up moms, new moms for success with that. So yeah, I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit more about that because, or a lot more, because I feel like until it happens to you, it's not something you think about. Like I can't say that I was, you know, really thinking about the right ways to bend, lift, and twist until I needed to, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I think that's true for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. And to your point about prepping new moms, it's so important. I mean, I'm a physician. I do brain surgery, literally. And I got this child, my first baby, I came home with this baby. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this thing. I don't know how to feed it. I don't know how to do this for myself. Like, isn't there a manual? And I felt so empty, like I didn't know what to do, and unprepared and like tearful and like just freaking out. And I couldn't believe that I would like have this responsibility without any preparation. And so I think that everything that you do and people like you do is so important to prepare everybody that's willing to listen to some advice. So we can talk a little bit about, you know, why women tend to have problems with their back. And I think it really starts just with, you know, being pregnant, period. Of course, we develop a lot of weight gain very rapidly during pregnancy. Not only that, of course, there's a actual human being inside of your abdomen that is, it's technically inside of your uterus that's growing. And, you know, we're forced to have this kind of weird growth. As the baby grows, it stretches our abdominal muscles, our rectus muscles, which are the main supportive part to our core. And those just get completely stretched out. So the biggest part of back stability in our spine, and I tell patients this every day, like if you think of your lumbar spine, your lower back, it's literally the only bones that connect your upper body to your lower body, where your ribs end and your hips begin, there is nothing in between. And so except for your spine. And so the things that support your spine are very important. The muscles, you know, your back muscles and your core muscles. So essentially during pregnancy, all the anterior core muscles get completely stretched out. So you lose a lot of support. In addition to that, you gain a lot of weight. And you know, baby weight and water weight and et cetera. And then, you know, start to, have laxity in your pelvis, not a lot of support there, and the ligaments can stretch. So, you know, you're just kind of, I think it really, pregnancy in general just really sets up, women to have a lot of back pain. And I don't know many women that don't go through pregnancy without some form of lower back pain. So I think it's important to kind of, you know, prepare yourself even during pregnancy to focus on ways of realizing that you're not able to do certain, or you shouldn't do certain things with your back to put yourself at jeopardy of injury. So basically, you know, I think that working on, you know, try not to lift too much heavy things where baby's getting born. We want to like build all these things. We want to like prepare. We want to like wash clothes. We want to do all these things that is going to stress your back more. And so I think all those things are very important to keep in mind. Then, you know, as we get towards the birth, a lot of, you know, women will have a vaginal birth, which can disrupt our pelvic floor, stretch our pelvic floor. Some women have C-sections. A C-section is even more jeopardizing, I guess, to your spine because you're actually cutting the muscles of your abdominal wall, stretching the rectus to get to the uterus to deliver the baby, and then recovering from a surgery. So, so even if it is a vaginal delivery or if it is a C-section, the pure delivery process is something that will put your spine at risk. And then you get into the immediate postpartum window. So that first 6 weeks after delivery, whether it be, like I said, vaginal or C-section, we're doing a lot of things that we never did before. We're bending over and changing a baby's diaper nonstop, like 10, you know, 15 times a day, leaning over, picking the baby up, changing the bassinet, leaning over and looking at the baby, holding the baby in the front, trying to breastfeed, trying to clean ourselves from all the, you know, stuff that unfortunately happens after delivery. And you're stressed out, you're not sleeping, and, you know, emotional, and you're going to forget about things that you should do because you're exhausted and on the brink of probably mental breakdown having a mentee be.
I mean, pretty much. Yeah. Like that is really how it works.
Well, it is. It's just, it continues to spiral more and more out of control the further out from you get, but.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, it's a lot, you know, it's really a lot. And I see, you know, I see a lot of, you know, moms, I mean, really, God bless you if you have this kind of mentality, right? Like of just, you know, I had a baby and I feel great and I can do all the things. Well, yeah, but like, let's not push it because, you know, you may feel great and that's awesome. Or maybe you're still like riding the birth high, you know, but that doesn't mean that you need to go like hike a whole mountain right away or, you know, because like you said, there's a lot of big changes that have happened in like a really small period of time. And I think one of the things you talked about in your video, was about the hormones, right? So like you were saying, those ligaments and things stretch. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that because I think that's a really important consideration. Cause like you said, no matter what type of birth you had, you know, there's always kind of some common denominators at play.
Yeah. Yeah. So during the delivery process, of course, our pelvis is structured the way it is. You have your pelvis that's connected by your pubic symphysis, which is a cartilage right in the front of your pelvis above your, you know, above your vagina. And then your SI joints, excuse me, sacroiliac joints are connected to your sacrum and to your tailbone. And those are ligamentous joints too. So essentially your pelvis is structured as a ring, but that's separated by three different joints, two SI joints and one pubic symphysis joint that are designed by nature to stretch open to allow the woman's pelvis to open up for delivery. And those hormones that are secreted during that process are going to happen regardless of what type of delivery you have. And so that as, you know, the pregnancy gets further along, those ligaments become more lax and you've got pelvic symphysis type pain, SI joint pain, and those kind of sciatica from like the baby or things pressing on your lumbar plexus, which are those nerves deep in your pelvis. So a lot of women deal with sciatica from just compression. And so those are the things that I was talking about in the video. Me, myself, I suffered with my second pregnancy, my daughter, with a lot of SI joint pain to the point where like I operate, as a surgeon. So I have like foot pedals that I use. So one foot pedal I use for the drill and the other one I'll use for like a cautery device. But I got to where like I couldn't even stand on one foot to push the drill pedal because the pure putting my weight onto one side of my pelvis was excruciating. So I actually had to stop operating about 2 weeks before delivery because I couldn't do it. It was so painful.
Wow.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's a lot for sure. Right. So, so you had this issue where you had a young baby, you bent over to pick them up and you threw your back out, I guess, right. For lack of a better word. Right. What was you thankfully had more knowledge than most of us. So what was that like? Like, I mean, what did you do in that situation? Or like, you know, kind of what's ideal if somebody has that happen to them where they're like, ooh, yeah, something's not right there. Right. Like, you know, do they run to the chiropractor? Do they run to you? There's probably an in between, like, cause I think right. that's, you know, again, a new issue, right? If you've never dealt with this before, you don't really know where to go. So, right. yeah.
So I think the biggest thing would be talking about prevention. So, you know, not trying to do a lot as we're in that post, you know, prepartum, peripartum, postpartum window, not trying to do a lot of like real, a lot of bending because, I mean, you want to, we always teach lift with your legs, not with your back. And that's true, like during this fall. And we should really take that to mind in general as well as a good spine health initiative. But, you know, really trying to keep your spine straight anytime you do anything, because your spine is straight, you're bearing your loads of gravity on your spine equally. But if you're doing a lot of bending, you force all the weight on the front of your spine. And so that back part of your spine where your disc can tear is so much more vulnerable. So yeah. And so I think a lot of people, when they feel a twinge, or their back feels, I think a lot of patients describe it as feeling weak, or they feel something in their back. That's a warning sign that something's not right. It's not normal to feel like something weak in a focal spot in your back or feel like something's going to give or feel like you need to pop it. That should be a warning sign that, okay, I need to take it easy. I need to be cautious about doing anything. Because if you continue to do that, like continue to bend with that warning sign, well, you're probably feeling some, you know, there's a different number of possibilities it could be, but it could be a disc that's about to tear because you'll start to feel the annulus stretching. And that's a very innervated part of our body, of our spine, the disc. And so that pop that a lot of people feel or that feels like their back gives out is sometimes a tear in the disc, like what I described, which a lot of people have. It's where a ring that's normally coats our disc, our structure, hard part of our disc kind of gives out or ruptures. And that's what happens. So the answer to your question is, okay, that happens. Now what? The best thing to do in that situation, assuming that you don't have anything else alarming, like no weakness in the legs, no bowel, bladder incontinence, not being able to feel a certain part of your body, those should be warning signs to go immediately to your doctor, to the emergency room. But assuming it's just back pain or maybe a little bit of leg pain or maybe a little bit of numbness, like in one leg or something like that, we typically recommend conservative treatment. So just, you know, taking some over-the-counter ibuprofen, some ice, some rest for sure. No BLTs, which you mentioned earlier, that BLTs yep. are bending, lifting, twisting, which as a spine patient, you probably have learned that by the back of your hand.
Every time the nurse came in, every 4 hours at a minimum. Okay, so no BLTs.
Yep.
For a while. They were like, ideally forever, but like, yeah, for a while.
right. So, yeah, so we want to try to take it easy. And usually, I mean, almost 80% of those types of injuries just self-resolve.
Yeah.
The only real needs, I mean, I'm not an opponent to chiropractic management. I think they do good things, but I think most people just kind of self-resolve on their own by a little bit, a week or two, or even a day or two of rest. But realizing that that event is something that doesn't mean, okay, my back gave out yesterday, it's feeling great, I'm going to go lift a 50-pound bag of whatever tomorrow. Like, no, like your back still has to heal. So kind of being letting your body do its healing work for a few weeks is probably a good idea.
I would say that's a really good idea. And, you know, gosh, I try to remind people too that, you know, when you have a baby, you've got this little newborn and you've just brought them home. Like, there's no time in your life that is going to be like, there's just no other time in your life where people are going to be as willing to help you as they are in that moment. Like, that is correct. They want to buy you stuff. They want to come over. I mean, yeah, it's about the baby mostly, right? But like, let them help you out. Take that chance to rest. Like, because if you want to ask for that same amount of support and care and taking it easy 4 months later, it's not as easy to get. You feel a little weird about it. Like, milk it right now is what I usually tell people, because yeah, you know, I would say take it easy. I mean, you know, I think there's also, you know, this women have become more aware that this is an issue, right? Of having the diastasis of the muscles, and yes, that can happen. Like you're saying, I never thought of it that way, that like what you just, it's so obvious, but there's no other bones between your ribs and your hips. You've just got this lumbar spine. That's it. And then muscles. So if you've got muscle separation going on in this extremely important part of your core, what's happening to the dynamics of everything else? Something else I assume has to take up the slack.
And it's going to be your spine. Yep, exactly.
The spine. Yeah.
So I think a lot of people, I mean, you know, when you say it out loud and you kind of reason through, you're like, well, that makes total sense. But you know, so almost no one thinks of that. And even myself as a spine surgeon, until, you know, until I went through all this, I didn't really, no one ever told me that. And so it's something that I've kind of been very big on educating patients, because I don't think that a lot of people even think of that. And even you mentioned the diastasis issue. I mean, that's an issue that really can linger in a lot of women forever. I mean, if you've got you have twins or you have a large baby, you know, the diastasis may not correct itself. And I think that I've seen, I have a plastic surgeon friend. It's amazing how many patients, women get, you know, the mommy makeover, and they get their diastasis corrected and wake up and like, they don't have any more back pain after their diastasis is corrected.
Wow.
Because it really does strengthen your core. So I hate to keep using myself as an example, but I have learned a lot from my own body. But I did. I mean, I had a mommy makeover when my daughter was one, because I knew I wasn't going to have any more kids. And I had the back pain since the injury with my son. So since 2015, I've had back pain. It wasn't anything I couldn't live with, but it was always there. And the moment that I woke up, I had a 2-inch diastasis that was repaired during my mommy makeover. And the moment I woke up from surgery, I never had another pain like I had. It was wild. I'm like, this is, I mean,
wow.
I couldn't even believe it. And it was all, I mean, you know, has to be because of the diastasis, probably a little bit extra skin, but I really do think a lot of it was the diastasis. And I've spoken to many of my patients that have been through that. And my colleague that does a lot of abdominoplasty and diastasis corrections, that I think that really holds true. Obviously it's not going to be a cure for everybody's back pain, but if your back pain is a result of a weak core, either working on really aggressively trying to help your diastasis with physical therapy, and core strengthening is super important. I'm not suggesting that everybody get a tummy tuck, but I do think that if you're contemplating that, that might be one of the pros.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, whether you want to do it for aesthetic purposes, or, you know, you really just have this issue that is going to be helped by surgery. I have a family member, she's got two kids. She probably, I guess it was sometime last year, she had that done. I mean, she had like 5 pounds of loose skin removed. They did a, I guess what you'd call an extended tummy tuck. It was so extensive, and she got that diastasis repaired, and she is at the gym with a personal trainer. Finally, like, that's what she wanted to do, and she hasn't been able to do it. So like, to your point, I never asked her if she has had back pain before, but that, you know, I will. I'm going to ask her now, but it's a huge limiting factor, you know? So, oh my gosh. Wow. Well, I'd love to switch gears for a moment because, you know, we're talking about spine stuff and, you know, whether it's, you know, something you go into the birth planning to have, or you decide last minute, give me the drugs. Lots of women are getting epidurals. I was one of those with my first, like I was planning all natural and those contractions were coming hot and heavy for a really long time. And I remember, you know, we get through triage. I'm in the room. I'm like, so like, you've called the anesthesiologist, right? Like they're on their way. They're like, yeah, but oh, honey, we have to give you an IV for, you know, like 30 minutes before. What? No, we don't have 30 minutes. Like, yeah. No, give me the drugs. But you know, I remember that in my birth class, there's a lot of fear about birth interventions, right? And epidurals in particular. And I'm not saying there's, you know, not potential issues or side effects or what have you, but I think there's this big, big conception about, you know, back pain and that's lingering because you got an epidural or it can, you know, cause back pain. And you're obviously the expert in this. So I would just really love for you to speak to that because, you know, I don't think it's fair. I mean, for someone who's been in chronic pain, I get it. Like, you do not have to be tough, right? Like, do not put yourself through pain. That's not a good experience for your baby, yourself, your body. Like, I fully support anyone's choice in that. So I don't want anybody to have unnecessary fear over those types of things.
Right. Yeah. So I hear it all the time. And in women that see me for their back pain, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard, well, I've had back pain ever since I had that epidural. And mm-hmm. I think that is so such a huge misconception that that an epidural can cause chronic back pain. And so we talk about, like, let's first talk about like what an epidural injection or what an epidural catheter is. It's think of it like an IV for your spine, so for your nerves. So when you have an IV, you stick a needle into your vein and you thread a tubing into your vein, and that tubing is hooked up to fluids or medications, and it's injected directly into your veins. And then when your IV is ready to be removed, you pull it out, and then, you know, that vein sews, it heals the hole itself and your body heals that. And, you know, you don't ever think of chronic pain related to an IV site unless something really traumatic happened, but you know, you never think twice about that. And so an epidural is very similar. You have a access point to your spine. An anesthesiologist place a needle into your spinal canal, which is where your spinal fluid is. They thread a catheter into that space, and that catheter is used to deliver medicines. And then once the medicines are done, the catheter is removed, that hole, your body seals up the hole, and there is no physiologic way that you know, pending a complication, that can cause chronic pain. Of course, there are exceptions, and I'm not saying that's 100%, but I do think that the reason why a lot of people kind of associate it with that is because a lot of people pass on that misnomer. And hear somebody else say it, and they're like, well, my back has hurt ever since I had the baby. It was the epidural. No, it's for all the reasons that we just talked about. It's the ergonomics, it's the lack of core strength. You maybe injure your back, and you probably have some diastasis. Therefore, your back probably hurts. A lot of women, unfortunately, you know, body changes after we have a baby, and they end up gaining, you know, weight, maybe keeping on a little extra baby weight. And so the recollection of the whole pregnancy journey may be not remembering so much about the back pain because the pregnancy was so overwhelmingly on the mind. But then once the baby's out, the pregnancy's done, dang, my back does hurt. So everything is related timely back to the birth. And the only thing that people remember of the birth that was associated with their back is the epidural. And, you know, it's right. Not, doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, I mean, it's nor human nature to point to say, okay, that intervention causes pain, but there's just no physiologic way that it really causes chronic pain. And so I think that was a good way of explaining it, but.
Oh, no, that's a really good way of explaining it. And, you know, for, for those who don't know the anatomy that well, like you're talking about, you know, where that epidural catheter is in, that's not in the same area where you're going to find the vertebrae and the disc, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the nerves travel in the center of our spine. And our spine's role, the reason why we have a spine, is a bony structure that forms a circle. And inside of that circle is where our nerves travel. So the spine is just the support to our nerves. And so the catheter is placed into the space the nerves are, nowhere near the disc. It's threaded between the bone. You don't really go into bone. And so it can cause, you know, a catheter that's placed, it is floating right beside the nerve. So some women do tend to have, you know, sciatica pain from the epidural if it's threaded beside a nerve and kind of irritates a nerve, or they may only get relief on one side and not the other because maybe the catheter is off to one side and so on. And so there are little variances with the way that the catheter can be placed. But you're right, there is no way that you can really place it into where the discs are, cause an injury to the disc from the actual catheter. So,
yeah, for sure. And I'm no spine surgeon, but I did have a discogram done yes, prior to my surgery, which is, you know, they injected some medicine and some fluid into the actual disc itself. You could argue about whether or not you want to do a control disc with that or whatever, but we did a control disc, and later imaging, you know, that hole healed up. It's not like it's leaking now because we poked it, right? So, you know, just to reassure people, even if it didn't get poked, it's probably not going to be, hopefully, a big issue.
Our bodies are really good at healing itself, so that's good.
Yeah, it is. Well, you've talked about ergonomics a lot too. So, you know, we talked about BLTs, but like you were talking about the pack and play, and you know, I had a pack and play with my first too. Why is that bad? Other than my kid would never sleep in it. Yeah, those ergonomics of things, you know, cribs. Oh my goodness. You know, I know you can, you know, oftentimes, you know, kind of slide that, you know, panel down, right? And maybe you don't have to kind of crane your body over so much. But anybody with a sleeping baby knows that you want to make as little movement and noise as possible. So you're probably not going to shimmy that thing back up and risk waking your baby up. So like, what do we do? How do we take care of these babies? You know, how do we sit and nurse? How do we sit and pump? How do we, you know, go about this life and protect our backs?
That is a great question. So I think there's so many new innovative things that we have in this day and age that even I didn't have, you know, 8 years ago when I had my first. And I think it's important to utilize anything that you can to help. So those little nursing pillows, the little U-shaped things are fantastic. Yeah. It keeps the baby's weight off of your arms. It helps support the baby. And keeps them more at, you know, a level of height where it's good for your spine. I think that those are really good things in terms of nursing and, you know, trying not to, we've been focusing a lot on the back, but even the neck, like craning over, yep, the baby, turning your head, always looking to one side. Alternating is good too, to kind of switch up the variety between how your neck moves and focuses. And then bassinets are huge. So you mentioned you had the pack and play. I had the pack and play. I mean, I had a 4-week-old baby. It's not like I need to dip him into a 3-foot drop off down into the floor to lay him down to sleep, when a bassinet is just fine because they're not even rolling. And so bassinet, you know, it's you can pull it up to a height where you're not bending and stooping, or even the cribs where the mattress lifts up really high, where you're not having to drop the side rail like you're mentioning, but keeping the baby higher, safely, of course, at a level to where you are doing things better for your back, where you're not doing a lot of bending. And that even goes with changing tables. A lot of the changing tables are lower than they should be. I was changing my son on a pack and play bassinet thing, which is way lower than what a higher changing table is. So it's ideal to try to change a baby at the level where you're not having to bend over. So you know, changing the baby in the floor is not a great for your back either because you're leaning over. So an ergonomic changing table, you can get one at Walmart for, you know, under $100, can really save yourself a lot. So I think of just, if you conceptually think about the layout of how things are going to work in the first few months after delivery, and setting up your living space, because essentially that I feel like that's all I did for like the first 6 weeks is sleep, feed, change poop, and eat. So just think of your living area and how you can make that more safe for you and for the baby is really important for your back. So
I love that. Yeah. And, you know, you said something about, you know, kind of talking about different products and whatnot. It made me think of baby wearing. What are your thoughts on baby wearing as a spine surgeon?
I mean, I love baby wearing. I think that as a, and in that phase, it's so important for the, you know, for mom and baby to the baby be close. And I think that it's helpful. It is a lot of weight on the spine, but you know, and that phase they're under 20 pounds. So it's not, the end of the world. And we can probably delve a little bit onto when they get a little older and some suggestions I have like in from 6 months and on, cause I have a few for that. But you know, baby wearing, I think is reasonably safe, but wearing the baby 24/7 may not be the best for the back. So just keeping those things in mind, whenever you're, you know, in that phase, particularly if you're having a lot of back issues, maybe baby wearing, less is better for you.
Yes, I would agree. You know, I think you always have to take your individual circumstances into account, right? If it seems like because the baby is held so close to you, though, it's not the same as lifting something heavy far away from your body, right? So probably better.
Yeah. And I'd rather have someone hold or wear the baby and let the baby sleep there than repetitively bend over in a bassinet to check them or something like that, because that type of maneuver is way more risky to the spine. So,
Yes. Yeah. And gosh, you know, I think to what you're saying, it's all connected. And, you know, there's the back and the core, which is not just your abs. And then you've got this whole, you know, pelvic region, and pelvic floor health has, you know, gotten more awareness, which is wonderful. I just had, Dr. Tara Sullivan on the podcast. She is a pelvic PT. She teaches at a local hospital here. She's wonderful. So I know that's part of the core support too. How do you see that working together with, you know, the back and the spine and overall just, you know, in terms of birth and pregnancy and postpartum? Because I know that's something that almost seems to get a little more attention than the back, which, you know, yeah. I understand why we isolate things, you know, to one specific area, right? You've got, you know, hand surgeons out there and, you know, all sorts of things, right? But like, it's not all, you know, it's not always that compartmentalized, I guess.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, pelvic floor is obviously extremely important and is a big focus on postpartum care because, I mean, we think of birthing a baby, it comes out of our pelvis and there are so many muscles and support to our pelvic floor. There's over 40 muscles down there. And so I think the pure carrying the baby, delivering the baby, and then the weakness that can ensue as a result of birth trauma or delivery or, you know, bladder issues related to pelvic floor weakness are so prominent. You're going to talk to urologists. They're going to talk about pregnancy and how it's related to pelvic floor weakness. You're going to talk to a spine surgeon. I'm going to tell you about the back, but I think that pelvic floor is a huge component to your spine health too, because of if you have a weak pelvic support girdle, your pelvis really helps support your spine too. So many of those muscles are really interconnected to your lower lumbar area, to your SI joints and SI joint pain, sacroiliac. When I say SI, I mean sacroiliac joint, is a huge component of back pain in women in their 20s and 30s. And a lot of it has to do with pelvic floor issues, weakness, et cetera, or a little bit of instability that maybe kind of sets in as a result of laxity that we talked about with the ligaments, or just some ongoing ergonomic issues that don't get resolved and those ligaments don't really tighten up how they should. And I think that, you know, when you do have pelvic floor strengthening, it's going to help all of that as well, which may help with chronic back pain. So.
Wow. That, yeah. What, you're just connecting all of the dots because it makes so much sense. It's like obvious when you say
it. It's all connected.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for not speaking doctor to us, because I think it's, you know, sometimes that we just need things just really spelled out in everyday language. And you're like, oh yeah. Okay. Now I get it. You know, it's difficult to interpret all this stuff otherwise for the layperson. So yeah. And I think like what you're saying, you know, there's some things that are going to maybe come up anyway, and maybe it's age, maybe it's because that's when you're at a childbearing age. And I'm curious about that, because we've talked about like the annular tears in the disc, and, you know, there's degenerative disc disease, which is really kind of a normal aging process. Like, women these days are having babies at older ages than they used to, you know, more are having them in their 30s, even later 30s. Is that a time when we're probably already expecting to see some of those degenerative changes in someone's spine, and it's coinciding? Like, you know, like, it would it be different, you know, if you're 22 and having a baby versus 37, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask, because maybe there's something that's you're predisposed, you know, by virtue of age or something.
Right. Yeah. I think that, everybody's spine ages differently. And a lot of it has to do with genetics. It has to do with what you do in your life. You know, your job, if you're doing a lot of lifting, or if you sit a lot, or if you're someone that's very athletic and strengthens your core every day, all those, people's spines are going to look totally different. Some people have a significantly predisposed family history of having back problems, and they're more likely to have back problems as they get older. But I think the issue is not necessarily that women in their late 30s are more likely to have at baseline disc issues. I don't think that's necessarily the case. Obviously, most women in their 22 years of age are not going to have any disc issues. But I think the longer you live, the more injuries that you may sustain to your back. And so any little, you know, injury that you have to your back may predispose you to another injury. So if you take a woman that's 20 versus a woman that's 35, they've lived 15 more years of their life and have most likely done something to predispose them to injury. So, you know, we all try to be healthy and work out and do lift weights and do all these things. And, you know, lifting weights improperly can definitely cause an injury to your disc. So I think that a lot of women in that, you know, late 20s age range, trying to get, you know, trying to get fit, trying to get healthy again, and do things that maybe subject them to injury, and then they get pregnant and then maybe are a little bit more predisposed to re-injuring themselves.
That makes sense. And I guess on that note too, I've been asked this question a few times, and I'm really not the expert at all. You know, for me, I'm still in my 30s, hanging in there. I'm done having kids though, so I'm not worried about it. But I know other people in my position that have gone, you know, the route of an artificial disc replacement or a fusion, but even lesser things, you know, some sort of laparoscopic, minimally invasive, you know, lumbar decompression or something. For women, especially, they have this question that they feel like they're not getting answered by their surgeons, which is, if I have this spine procedure now, and I assume it, you know, varies by person and what you've had done and the severity and all of that, like, what do I need to be aware of if I get pregnant and have children, or I want to have children? Like, I think they're worried about, you know, messing up their back again, right? They've done something to fix the issue, and now they're like, oh, can I, is it okay if I get pregnant? Is it okay if I go through the process of childbirth? Or like, am I going to cause problems? And, you know, there's no crystal ball, but I'd love your perspective on that.
Yeah. So I would agree with you that it really depends on the nature of what's going on. But for the most part, even a back surgery really wouldn't predispose you to changing your birth plans at all. I think that, you know, lumbar disc replacement, for example, still preserves the mobility of the disc. And, you know, that shouldn't really affect it. A discectomy, same thing. I mean, you wouldn't want to have a microdiscectomy and then, you know, get immediately pregnant because you got a vulnerable disc there. So I do have patients that I'll recommend that, you know, maybe they are trying to get pregnant. Like, okay, let's maybe if you could try to wait at least a year and let your back heal before you subject it to more strain than really maybe you need at this point in your recovery. Really the only thing I think that's super, even patients have had scoliosis surgery as kids. We've seen, there's this one like cute little girl on TikTok that I've been following this going through her scoliosis journey. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's been on my YouTube page all the time. Like, you know, these teenage scoliosis correction, they can still have kids and not have to worry about anything. It's really the SI joint fusions is what I worry about. So anybody that's had their SI joint fused, their pelvis may not open up just as much as someone that doesn't have a fused SI joint. And so that's usually, I just tell them to talk to their gynecologist or obstetrician about what may be right for them in terms of their whether or not vaginal delivery may be appropriate. But for the most part, I think it's fine.
Oh, that's so reassuring for sure. I'm going to have to share that with some of my spine surgery support group friends. I'll be like, hey, listen, fast forward to this timestamp because, you know, it's easy, right? It's easy to worry about these things, you know, lots of questions come up and what have you. And, you know, I love that you have a personal perspective and that you're bringing your story into this because I think it matters. And you obviously, you know, love what you do, like you said, and have this, you know, compassion for your patients. And you know, I think that really shines through and just obviously the content that you create. So I'd love to hear if there's, you know, one piece of advice that you would give a mom who's either pregnant or, you know, has a young baby, you know, anything in particular. It doesn't even have to be spine related, but some wisdom or solid advice you'd love to share with them.
Yeah, I think just understanding that nothing is perfect and that, you know, that is definitely in my experience and almost every single mom that I know, the most vulnerable part of your life, no matter where you are in your life, what you do for your career, that little life that you have given birth to is so important to you. And you know, you don't want to mess it up. And so I think we just tend to really be so hard on ourselves with everything. We're trying to be perfect wife, a perfect partner, a perfect, you know, mom, a perfect doing our job the best. And like we get pulled in all these directions. And I think the biggest, you know, point of advice I would say is just really try to look and see what's best for you and outside of the baby and outside of the everything else that's going on, that if you don't give love to yourself, you're not going to be able to give love to anybody else any much more. So you have to have a full cup before you can dispense it, because if it's empty, there's nothing left to give. So that would be my one biggest probably piece of advice.
Oh, I think that's such good advice for anybody. And you're clearly walking your talk. So thank you for everything that you've shared with us today. I think this is so informative and hopefully reassuring for folks listening out there. So thank you, Betsy.
Thanks for having me. I hope I've shared some wisdom with at least one person that will gain some knowledge from this. So thanks.
Yes. And, you know, head over to TikTok, be her millionth and one follower. I'm sure you've racked up even more while we're sitting here, but no, she's got some awesome content over there and it's not all boring sciencey stuff. So check it out.
Did you know most moms stop breastfeeding in the first month postpartum? I believe succeeding at breastfeeding means having the right mindset. In fact, studies show that the number one factor that determines breastfeeding success is commitment, which is why I've created my incredible audio download of breastfeeding affirmations, where I give you actionable mantras so you can breastfeed your baby with confidence and peace of mind. And best of all, it's free. To get access to this audio and PDF, simply visit holisticlactation.com/mantras, and you can get started right now.